Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, we're recapping a surprisingly good field and week in Mexico for the Mayacoba, and a familiar name notching another big win in his young career. The LPGA playing in some likely winter or cooler weather with a major in Texas this weekend, played in Dallas last weekend, recounting our younger days of golf and taking a travel to an African oasis with the European Tour. We get tuned in outside of sports with some comedy relief. And this week's guest is a PGA Tour tournament director by the name of Tracy West. We're getting into the future of fans on the PGA Tour, a great Arnold Palmer story, and lots of fun stories from her decades in the game. And we finish with some holiday plans and dessert when we hashtag always end with food. And all of it is brought to you by our friends at FlightScope, the makers of the Mevo. It's that wonderful little portable unit that you need to get for the golfer in your life. We're always trying to figure out our yardages, Mike. You know me and I know you. We never know exactly how far we're going to hit the club on any given day, depending
it's
on what
really
we get out of our bag.
It's a prayer.
But it's nice to at least have some information and get the data and figure out what you are doing on any given day. And that's exactly what the Mevo provides. So our promo code is COL10 to check out FlightScope Golf, FlightScopeGolf.com, and get the Mevo unit for yourself. Again, promo code COL10 for 10% off the Mevo unit. I use it in the backyard or on the range to get dialed in. So much info in that little Mevo unit. Again, promo code COL10 and FlightScope Golf.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf and Groove It Golf. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, they were south of the border at the Mayacoba Golf Classic near Cancun,
yes,
where the sun decided not to show up at all.
Yeah, it was like you usually expect 7 days of paradise when the guys head down there, especially this time of year. And it was far from that. They were dodging thunderstorms, controversially playing through some absolute downpours during the weekend. But
no, it was just 2020 golf. Golf in 2020. It's just,
yeah, I know. You'd figure, yeah, oh, Mexico, end of the year, you know, great field. Hey, let's all take the wives down, you know, go on a vacation. You know, it's paradise. And then they get drenched with a few days of storms. But they eventually got the tournament in when they needed to on Sunday.
They did. And it was a bit of a shootout. And especially on the last day where it took to the 18th hole, we did not get extra golf, but we did get to see Victor Hovland birdie the 18th to get his second career PGA Tour victory. He does well when they're kind of south of the continental United States, winning in Puerto Rico, and now here in the Mayacoba in Texas, or in Mexico.
He's a tropical winner, basically, is what it comes down to. And it's two wins now, Mike. We keep talking about this. I keep trying to put money on Victor Hovland to win a tournament. My picks are weekly at Course of Life 1 on Twitter. He's a guy that, you know, I've been trying to hit when the right week comes around. I just feel like he's always sniffing the leaderboard. He's got that unbelievable made cut streak right now. I think it's one of the longest in golf next to Rory. It's like 17, 18, 19 cuts in a row he's made. He's unbelievably consistent. He's now got two wins on his young career here now for the former Oklahoma State, now prodigy, who's really making it happen early in his career. It's exciting to watch.
Yeah, you know, he was fun to watch when he was amateur status, right? And now he's out there, and we were talking about this before. We talk about some other guys who wore the Oklahoma orange, like Matthew Wolf, like Ricky Fowler, you know, and Victor Hovland is the one who's kind of really getting it strong right now.
Yeah, out of that power rankings, I can't believe this. And this would be shocking to say like 4 or 5 years ago, because the roles were reversed. Like Ricky Fowler like brought these kids up and got them to play at Oklahoma State as teenagers and recruited them to be there and play for the team that he played for in college. And Hovland Wolf kind of looked up to Ricky for a while. That, you know, fast forward a few years later, that script is totally reversed. I power rank them right now. You know, Hovland 1, Wolf a close 2, and Ricky's a distant 3 on that short list there of pokes. Kind of scary.
Yeah, it's, you know, we were talking about this before we started recording today, that it's Ricky is maybe one of the biggest duds in golf, just a guy that we all wanted to do well and win a bunch of times and is friendly and is a great ambassador for the game. And yet, you know, what's he got in his trophy case recently?
I know no major. He's got the Players Championship from a while back. I don't even remember what year it was that long ago, but that's his biggest win to date. You know, he's won tournaments on tour, but the bottom line has not gotten that major yet. He's far and away the most accomplished player yet to win a major, which is not a good title to have. If you're in golf at all, that's a very bad title to have.
So we can go back, about 15 years or so when we all said that Phil was the best lefty to never win a major. And then he rattled off a bunch. So, I mean, you don't need to do it in your 20s. It's easier when you can win majors in your 20s. But it, you know, doesn't always happen. So now the question is, so let's put Ricky in the rear view. So Victor Hovland now is his second win. If you had to choose between Victor Hovland and Matthew Wolf, who's going to have more wins and have a better career?
It feels like if you're just looking at finishes and strength and consistency, it's Hovland, because Wolf's one of those guys where you and I know we've done some broadcasts on Hot Mic. We've done some streams and there's been some random tournaments where he shows up and then he will just go off the radar for like 3 or 4 months and sure, you won't even see him around a leaderboard. So he is kind of much more of a roller coaster ride, whereas Hovland's giving you that consistency week in and week out and the ability to contend on so many different courses. He's just going to fall into opportunities. And that's how the best get a lot of wins.
Yeah, this reminds me of as we were reading about Tiger Woods in his time when he was looking for consistency and just to give himself opportunities and not to maybe lap the field like Matthew Wolf can maybe do in some of these tournaments when he's on, but to just consistently give himself chances to win.
Yeah, it's an interesting introspective looking at those three guys who all went to Oklahoma State for golf. We'll be following them, and especially Hovland, now that he's off to the races with tour win number two already.
Before we move on, can we talk about Brooks Koepka and his rough weekend in Mexico after missing the cut?
Yes, and his Instagram model photo shoot with his girlfriend, Jenna.
Jenna Sims posted a photo of her in a bikini and a very clear cover-up, daintily putting grapes in Brooks's mouth as he laid on the sofa. Rough life when you miss the cut.
An all-time Kings Stay Kings moment there for Brooks. Yeah. He loves to poke fun at the spotlight and that whole kind of social media craze and phenomenon. He really has kind of leaned into it like the last year or two. I mean, like, I appreciate his self-awareness. Like, he knows, like, his girlfriend and kind of, you know, where she sits on social media. And, you know, she is a model and whatnot, so she puts herself out there and he has fun doing it in kind of a joking manner. And, yeah, not a great week for Brooks on the course, but he clearly did enjoy his time. Be sure to check out those photos on Instagram because interesting spread of photos. What was that? Magazine or something like that? Or maybe Playgirl?
I am going to throw this out there because this is what I was thinking as I saw this. And just look at what Brooks Koepka has done recently. Is he too distracted? Is he not caring about the game anymore? Because we haven't seen him contend. I know he's hurt for a while. But I mean, I feel like he loses and then you see him doing stuff on social media. Is he practicing? Is he going out there and trying to get back in shape so he can win again? Or does he not care anymore?
You know, it's the thing where he says he is, and you got to take him at his word because he's one of those guys that really does turn it off when he leaves the golf course. Like, he's admitted before that golf is not necessarily his favorite sport by any means. It's the one he plays best. You know, this is a guy that is one of the greats in the game. Undoubtedly is one of the best players in the world right now. But he has a different type of commitment to the game than the average world-class player. So you have to look at that when you measure where you see him on or off the course and how much time or time he isn't putting in. Interesting always to follow Brooks on social, though. And he had a lot of fun with the photo shoot this week.
It certainly looks like he did. Hopefully he can put it back together on the course as well.
See you in 2021 for that and a lot of the world's best.
We will. Let's move over to the LPGA Tour real quick here because they were in North Texas.
The Colony. Right? Yeah. Over that area.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's up there. Mm-hmm. And past guest, Shia Knight, was the defending champion. Go take a listen to that interview with her that we had When was that?
They all started to blur together. When you're in quarantine, I think that was like June or July, as crazy as that is. Yeah.
It was not that long ago.
It wasn't just a couple of waves ago. She was a great interview though. And, she did not defend her title, but it was great to see her in action. And it was blistering cold, Mike. Angela Stanford got the win, 43 years old. Shout out to her, being an older winner on the LPGA Tour. But you and I know from our New England golf days that you can play golf in pretty cold weather, but up in North Texas, I don't think they were expecting it to be this cold for the first week in December, but you know, from experience, it can get kind of sneaky chilly there. And then there were winter caps and gloves and parkas and the whole nine yards this past week on the LPGA.
Yeah. You know, my short time that I spend in the North Dallas area, there was ice, there was snow.
Yeah.
It was a very odd winter. It gets cold up there. There's nothing there to block the wind when it gets breezy out there.
Yeah.
So it gets chilly.
It was like full on winter snow hats. And they were like putting the mittens back on, like after every swing. There's like highs in the
days. Did anyone have on a hoodie? Did we have any hoodie settings?
Yep, there were a few hoodies that I saw. Yep, there were some really cool, stylish Nike and Adidas ones. I saw Mel Reed wearing one, a couple other players. So shout out to the hoodies and golf. We're totally okay with that. And good to see the LPGA players out there grinding. We'll get to their major coming up in a little bit. But we got to do a quick little travel segment in honor of our friend at the Euro Tour, Mike. It's time for you and everyone else to get out their Google machines right now. We're going to take you to where the Euro Tour was this past week. A really, really cool place. Sun City, South Africa. Now, Sun City, Mike, you said before we hopped on here, I feel like that's a town city term used like in lots of different parts of the world. There's a Sun City everywhere.
Yeah, I got a Sun City up in Hilton Head there for 60 plus, you know. So
and there's one of them in Texas too, same exact deal. So this one is far from that though. As you're looking at Sun City, South Africa, maybe Google the Sun City resorts as well too. Yeah. There's a few of them in this area where the tour was last weekend, but talk about a massive pool and just like a gigantic castle-like structure out in the South African wilderness. It looks tropical and it's like smack dab in the middle of the country. So very interesting.
I feel poor and unworldly when I look at these pictures.
You would have appreciated the broadcast on Saturday and Sunday morning. They were actually taking a camera, the Euro Tour broadcast, and like walking you through the different parts of the resort. So you're just looking at like the families enjoying the pool, like the waiters got the tray full of drinks while walking it out to them as they enjoy their resort life there. It was quite a vibe. So shout out to Sun City, South Africa. And we have to shout out Christian Bezuidenhout, who is unbelievable backstory, who won again on the European Tour. We've talked about this before, Mike. You'll remember this. Yeah. This is a guy who accidentally drank rat poison as a two-year-old kid. It damaged his nervous system forever, causing a stutter and anxiety, which he's had for his entire life. And he got another win on the European Tour. This is like a true underdog story that really needs to be told more. Shout out to him for getting that win number two.
That's pretty cool. I mean, first of all, just his name alone is enough for me to want him to win more so I can hear it more, so I can learn how to pronounce it.
Bezuidenhout. It's a work in progress, but shout out to Christian for getting that second win. This is a guy, like, he even faced a suspension for those anxiety meds, which is like he was wrongfully suspended, got it revoked. Now, three-time Euro winner, ranked number 35 in the world. So exciting to see him climb the world ranking.
The official PGA Tour events are done for the rest of the year. We now get some of these fun little off events. And that means this next weekend, they're going to be in Naples, Florida, just, 8 hours south of me at the QBE Shootout.
Oh, yeah, sure. I call this the hit and giggle. It's a fun little event, two-man teams, kind of gets us a little bit ready for next weekend's Father-Son featuring Charlie and Tiger Woods, which is going to be epic. We're going to get into that next week. But yeah, this is a fun little watch. It's very casual, good Saturday, Sunday finish. And with two-man teams, Mike, you got two pros out there but playing on a given hole with using each other's information. There's a lot of birdies to be had. So people are going to be going low. I think those are Rory Sabatini and his partner, defending champion from last year. So always a fun watch.
Yes, it is. And of course, the real event to watch this weekend is going to be the U.S. Women's Open. It's going to be closer to you. It's going to be in Houston.
Mm-hmm. Um, yeah,
the final major. We have one more major in the golf season, and it is the LPGA.
Little Christmas time U.S. Open carnage, maybe? This could be fun, fun little treat for the women golfing audience and the golfing audience in general. It's going to be great to see them get the spotlight right now, because this is a time of the year where people typically would not be paying attention to a lot of golf, let alone the LPGA. And I'm glad that they're in this position. There's going to be an unprecedented amount of coverage across the NBC Sports networks. Yes, Mike, you are going to have to do a little stream digging during the course of the weekend if you're a diehard and you really want to watch some of this action. But overall, I think it's like 20 something hours of LPGA golf coming at you this weekend, so should be a good watch.
It's a lot. I'm just curious about if we're going to have another rookie win like last year when we had Lee Wynn as the 2019 PGA Tour rookie.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, all about is a young Korean going to win, or are we going to see the American crop rise up like they did a lot last year? There were a lot of American winners, and we're getting that tradition already. We just had Angela Stanford this past week, so we'll see what happens. But cool to have a major championship during Christmas season. Definitely something we're probably never going to have again, so enjoy it.
So we'll keep an eye on that. We'll let you know what happens next week after we watch it this weekend. Let's turn over to Tuned In to share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. Alex, what do you got? You got anything new you're watching?
Mike, have you ever, while putting you on the spot, have you ever watched Silicon Valley before? Do you know about that show at all? So it's
I've heard of it.
It's a cool show. You'd get on board with that show. It's the premise is essentially following a tech startup as they go from nothing to something to everything back down to nothing. And it's a really cool look into the tech startup world and how these companies get going and funding and all that fun jazz. That's a fun show starring Thomas Middleditch. He was the founder of the startup company Pied Piper. In that show, he's got a new sitcom on CBS that just piloted a few weeks ago. It's called Be Positive. Basically, a synopsis for how the show is formulated. The plot is that Thomas Middleditch, Mike, needs an organ transplant, and the only person he can get it from is like some really ditzy like girl that he was like vaguely friends with in high school. So it begs the question, if you needed an organ transplant and you could only get it from someone who just like really annoyed you at every turn, would you get it?
Why would I have to be hanging out with them to get it?
that was so funny how they did that in the pilot. They had them like randomly run into each other at a wedding. And like, of course, he just randomly goes, oh, yeah, well, I actually need a kidney. And she's like, well, I have two kidneys. Maybe you can have one of mine. And she like drunkenly offers it up. So it was an interesting start to the show nonetheless. But Be Positive is on CBS. Check it out. There's some good laughs in that one.
That's fan. Fantastic. I can't say I'm watching much myself right now. This particular last week wasn't a big watching week, but I did watch Holiday on Netflix.
Oh, nice. How'd you like it?
I don't want to spoil it because, you know, I watched it for my other podcast for 3 Minute Movie Reviews.
Shout out. Yeah.
I didn't think it was horrible.
Interesting.
Go ahead. Nor did I think it was bad.
3 Minute. Tune into 3 Minute Movie Reviews to hear how not horrible it may or may not have been. Good stuff. Yeah. Awesome. Let's get to this week's guest.
That is, as we get into this, I need to ask you, Alex, at what age did you first start volunteering at golf tournaments?
Yeah, it was, I want to say, we did a little recounting on this in the conversation we had coming up here. I think it was 11, might have been my first year as a sign kid, you know, carrying the sign as a standard bearer. That was my debut. So we're talking maybe 98 here, 1998, if I want to really date myself. So I'm going back now.
I mean, we're the same age. We're not dating ourselves with each other, just our audience. So, well, this week's guest is someone that you volunteered at her tournament when she was tournament director out there in Boston as well, right? Tracy West, who has been a tournament director for quite a few different tournaments. And you get into all the different tournaments she had, getting some cool stories with Arnie and everything. It's really, really kind of a cool interview. And also we'll hear about what she thinks about bringing fans back in 2021. So a lot of cool stuff coming in this conversation with Tracy West. But first, as always, we want to let you know that it's brought to you by Groove It Golf, makers of the Groove It Golf Brush. It is not your average golf brush. It's amazing, Alex. And you can sign up to get it right now on back order. So it's
pre-order. The anticipation is building right now.
Right now. we've been talking about this for weeks. It was out of stock. You got a mailing list. Now it's pre-order. It's going to come back and it's going to be better than ever. It's got a built-in pump that sprays water or a cleaning solution right onto your club face, allowing for a quick and efficient scrub on the course. It's got magnets so you can pop it right off of your bag and take it from the golf cart to the other side of the fairway when you're not allowed to drive across the fairway, which, you know, usually I always have to do.
Yeah.
And it's got a 3-year bristle guarantee. So if you can wear out the brush head cleaning your clubs in 3 years, send it back. They'll send you a free replacement. So prepare to be amazed with the consistency and control that Clean Grooves will give you using your existing golf clubs with the Groovit. You'll get the spin trajectory and consistency you've been looking for. So check out grooveitbrush.com and pre-order your Groovit brush today. Again, that's grooveitbrush.com.
Next up on the tee, she is based in the Tampa, Florida area, home of the Valspar Championship on the PGA Tour, where she is the tournament director there. She's worked for other events on the tour as well, and her and I go way back. We have a connection from back in the day. It's Tracy West joining the Course of Life. Tracy, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm really happy to be with you.
Definitely. Thanks for taking the time. So the background of your job is very interesting, but let's get into what the job actually kind of entails. You know, when people think about being a golf tournament director, I'm really curious how that comes to be. I'm a person that likes golf. I like golf tournaments. I like events. It seems like a lot of job, a job that a lot of people would want to gravitate towards. What was your path in officially first becoming a golf tournament director?
Yeah, for me, I had the great fortune of really getting into the business actually via volunteering. So I was working at a Fortune 500 company in Grand Rapids, Michigan in the late 80s, and had the good fortune of volunteering at a senior PGA Tour event at
yes,
the time.
That's right.
In Grand Rapids, Michigan. And when the senior PGA Tour began a new tournament in the Twin Cities, the tournament director that they hired was looking to hire an assistant tournament director and came over to our tournament. And I had the good fortune of meeting him. And we spoke several times during that tournament week. And he called me the next week and asked if I would be willing to move to the Twin Cities and join his growing team to start off this new tournament. And I said yes.
Very cool. So there's hope for people like me and all the other tour volunteers out there. If you put your foot in the right position and you talk to the right people, you can get it done and climb the ladder beyond a volunteer to exactly where you've gotten today. So let's talk about the PGA Tour champions officially. You and I really know it as the senior PGA Tour back in the day, and our connection was a tournament that you directed in my hometown of Concord, Massachusetts. It was originally known as, the Bank of Boston Classic, the Fleet Boston Classic, the Bank of America Championship, but you were there for a long time as the runner of that event. Talk to me a little bit about just your fondest memories of your time in the Boston area working that event.
Yeah, it was one of the, you know, once we started the tournament in Minneapolis, we started a company to try and manage more events throughout the country on the Champions Tour, Senior PGA Tour at the time. And so we were fortunate to land the Boston tournament, which was one of the oldest events on the Senior PGA Tour at that time. I think only the U.S. Senior Open was older. So it was at Neshai Country Club in Concord. And so, yeah, I was there for 10 years and had the chance to manage that event. And we had a great team there. And gosh, I love New England. I love Boston. I stayed there another 6 years after managing that tournament. So
nice.
I spent 6 years there. And it's a great area of the country for sure.
It is, yeah. So I have so many memories there as a kid. That was honestly, I indirectly have you to thank for me kind of really loving the game of golf and especially going to tournaments. I got to be a volunteer there as a standard bearer, a little kid carrying the sign, and I got to walk 18 holes with Lee Trevino. I watched Gary Player shoot lower than his age at that tournament. I walked 18 holes with Arnold Palmer and he gave me a signed ball. And these were all experiences that you helped deliver at that tournament. Talk to me about something I know you do really well, which is your association with the volunteers and making tournaments really fan friendly. I can tell you come from a volunteer background. So what's important to you about bringing kind of that aspect forward in the tournaments you run?
Yeah, I think, you said it well. I mean, starting off as a volunteer myself, I had the good understanding of tournaments don't happen, you know, without the volunteers. I mean, they just, the PGA Tour events, the business model wouldn't function. If we had to fill every role that a volunteer fills with a paid position, you know, the tournaments would go broke, right? That it wouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. So the PGA Tour is reliant upon the folks that volunteer, and they have a good time. They recognize that tournaments bring to a community. It's not only the quality of life of having, you know, a professional sporting event of the magnitude of the PGA Tour, the PGA Tour Champions, but the economic impact that it brings, and then the charitable aspect that it brings. And it's a sense of community. People have a lot of pride in these tournaments, as they should. So I understand the importance of volunteers. And so we always try and make sure that we do everything that we can to show our volunteers during tournament week and really throughout the year, the committee chair people that are really involved all year round, how much we appreciate them.
I love that message too. And you can start early, just like I did, you know, for families out there or parents with kids who are looking to get into the game. You know, you can be a standard bearer or help with the tournament in your teenage years. And I did. And that's why I had those amazing moments that I'll never forget. I got to ask, since I know you definitely spent a lot of time around the late, great Arnold Palmer in the years that he came to that tournament in the Boston area. I had that unforgettable 18 holes where he gave me the signed ball, which I'll keep for the rest of my life. What were some of your favorite memories being around the King and the years that he visited there?
Yeah, you know, we were so fortunate to have him come there, and you know, he was really there the whole 10 years that I was there, and that was really due, you know, certainly not to me. I mean, I think, you know, he got to years and appreciated, you know, that we always tried to go the extra mile and take really good care of him. But, you know, it was certainly the relationship that he had with the CEO of our company, Hollis Kavner, at the time. And then Arnold's investment advisor actually was from Concord, Massachusetts. So a fellow by the name of Dick Conley. And yeah. Dick was well in the New England area, in the Boston area, super involved in the Francis Ouimet Scholarship Fund, et cetera. So he was one of Arnold's dear, dear friends. So he really helped us also convince Arnold to play, because Arnold didn't usually play that tournament. So when the 10 years we ran it, he did come. And I guess some of my fondest memories, I mean, it just, you know, being around a lot of pro athletes and celebrities and so forth, you know, you don't get that awestruck, but I was always awestruck of him, you know, no question. And So I think one of my favorite memories is, he used to stay with Mr. Conley when he would come to the tournament, and there was a restaurant in Waltham, Massachusetts that they wanted to go to one evening, and it was full. It was busy. And Dick mentioned it to me, and I said, well, gosh, you know, do you want me to call? And he's like, oh my gosh, no, Arnold would never want to use his name like that. Wouldn't want to do it. I said, oh my goodness. You know, so I called anyway.
Yeah.
And I said, listen, I've got someone, you know. And the next day Arnold came and found me, and he gave me a little elbow, and he said, that was really nice of you to do that. He said, I would never have done that on my own. Like, he wouldn't have done that. That's just not him, right? But he appreciated the fact that we were trying to go above and beyond to make sure that he was well taken care of.
That speaks to the kind of guy he was. And again, I can't stress enough, he was the guy that walked through that entire line behind the 18th green in the Shattuck when I was a kid and signed absolutely every autograph for the fans there. It definitely speaks a lot to how great he was for the game and a good personality. I'm glad he got to get that meal in too as well. Nice work there. So obviously the Champions Tour noticed that and noticed how great you were, not only leading that tournament, but the organization you brought to that event. And it was a very successful one for a long time. So the PGA Tour noticed that. I'm curious, how did you first get involved with the tour? Was it directly working for the Valspar, or was it somewhere else?
No, it was really directly working for the Valspar. So after, so when our tournament, Bank of America Championship in 2008, when all, you know, heck was breaking loose with finances and, you know, and so forth, Bank of America didn't renew. So I actually left. At that point, I had been working in golf, you know, gosh, almost 20 years probably. Mm-hmm. And I decided to take a break. So for 6 years, I stayed in Boston, but worked for the Red Sox Foundation and Massachusetts General Hospital on a clinical program for veterans. And So I was gone from the game for about 6 years. And when our CEO, again, Hollis Kavner, landed and brought Valspar to the table as the title sponsor here in Tampa, we obviously had the ability to manage the event. So he called me and said, listen, you got to come back into golf. I need you here. So we left Boston and came here. So it was really, you know, with Hollis, and then obviously the PGA Tour's blessing, because they knew, you know, I'd done work for 20 years and on the Champions Tour. So they knew my work ethic from that. So it was, again, really good. And I have a lot to be thankful for to Hollis for sure.
Yeah, very cool. 180, how you left the game and it came back to you years after with the contact that you established in your earlier years. So let's talk about the venue for the Valspar. It's actually a course I've played. I haven't played very many PGA Tour venues, but I have gotten to play at Innisbrook. It's the Copperhead course. A lot of people know the Snake Pit as one of the trickiest stretches of golf and the Florida Swing for sure. Tell everyone who hasn't been to that venue maybe a little bit about the course and the venue itself for the tournament, because it's not your typical Florida flat layout that you might see everywhere.
No, it isn't at all. In fact, I always make a joke with people that if you were blindfolded and airlifted in and, you know, dropped in via helicopter onto the Copperhead course and, you know, took off your blindfold and someone said, what state are you in? You'd say North Carolina.
Yeah, I was going to say Carolina. Yeah, good call.
You wouldn't say Florida. You know, I think there's like one palm bush on the course somewhere. That's about it, right? It's so it's very, you know, a lot of undulation, a lot of trees, tree-lined course. It's a difficult and tricky course for them, no question. And that's why they really enjoy it. But it's a course that really any of the PGA Tour players can play well at. You don't have to be a bomber. In fact, you can't just go out there and just rip it. You know, you have to really think your way around that golf course. Larry Packard, the late great Larry Packard, was the course designer. And it's very challenging. And the guys really love it. And Innisbrook's a really nice resort. They get to stay, you know, if they want to. Most of them stay right on site, you know, so they can literally roll out of bed and roll out of their condos and, you know, be in the player locker room in 1 minute, right? So it's a nice setup for the players, and I think that's why that in combination with how good the course is why we get, you know, one of the top fields. We're in the top third of strength of fields every year on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, and I'll say it, Tracy, before you were there, I would say I've definitely seen a leap and bound increase in the quality of the field in recent years at the Valspar. So whatever credit that is to you, congratulations on what you're doing to get the best there. We had a nice moment from Tiger there where we almost won a few years ago as well, too. So there's definitely been a lot of highlight moments for the Valspar. Obviously, I want to get into kind of the elephant in the room. I'm here in Austin, Texas, and I've now taken my childhood volunteer skills from your Bank of America championship over to the Dell Match Play now. Last year was tricky for you and I. We had both those tournaments canceled in 2020 because of everything that's going on. Now, as you're looking forward to the Valspar in 2021, what's the outlook for the tournament in March and kind of what sort of discussions have you had about the tournament and where are we at in planning?
Yeah, so it was disappointing last year, no question. Yeah. You know, there was, you know, of us that were fully canceled and, you know, and then they finally got, you know, the return to golf back up and going in Fort Worth and the Colonial. But for those, you know, March through May, it was tough. But it pales in comparison to what's, you know, really happening, obviously, in the country and the world. Definitely. And so forth. So we take that with a proper perspective. But yes, we're looking forward to a much better 2021, no question. So we're busy, you know, it's the year of fluidity and unfortunately that fluidity from 2020 is going to move into 2021, right? So we have multiple different plans. We have plans for if we're just a golf tournament. We have plans for if we can have X number of our pro-ams happen and X number of our corporate sponsors come back, to limited number of general fans. You know, I don't think any of us right now, at least the tournaments coming up January through, you know, April, early May, feel that they're going to be their normal size with the, you know, normal number of fans coming.
Right.
that's really not going to happen. But what we're trying to do is have as many fans as we can, but do it in as safe as manner as we can as well. So we're trying to balance that health and safety, but also give the opportunity for as many fans to come out and see, you know, these great players. So we're hoping, so we're actually going to move our tournament this year till the last week of April. It actually gives us another 6 weeks from our normal, you know, third week of March timeframe. So we're hoping that 6 weeks, you know, it allows us to even have, you know, a few more fans than we would even in March. I think you'll see on the PGA Tour a slow build back of fans, you know, as the spring and, you know, spring progresses.
Yeah, you're giving yourself a little more buffer to normality there with the move to April. So that should be good, hopefully. Now, had you heard anything from reps at Houston or Bermuda at all? Because I know they teased and trialed a small amount of fans at the tournaments. Had you heard anything from them, or has there been any talks that have been kind of levied down to you guys on how to conduct that plan if there were potentially fans and galleries in the crowd?
Yeah, for sure. The you know, one of the beautiful things about the PGA Tour is and all the tournament directors and tournament staffs on the different events is we're very, very good about communicating and sharing with each other. And it's not a competitive situation, right? I mean, I want a Houston tournament to do well. They want us to do well. You know, we're different markets. So we're very, very good about sharing best practices with each other. And the tour's been obviously incredibly involved with COVID planning and you know, the what we have to do differently with the players and the caddies, but what we have to do think about for fans and for sponsors and so forth. So we're learning a lot. I think we learned a lot with the, you know, the 2,500 fans that were in Houston, and how do you enforce mask policies? You know, where and, you know, do you allow fans to eat and drink? All those sorts of things. So I think each week we're learning more and more, on how to tweak things and make things as good for people as possible. And I think it's a growing process. So it's a constant, we each have a plan, if you will, an operational plan, but it's kind of like plan A, B, C, D, E. And as soon as you think you have it down, you know, we make another tweak based on was learned the week before. Right. So everyone is very, very good about sharing ideas.
Yeah, the theme is definitely keep all plans on board until we know any further. I appreciate that. And hopefully we're able to have some fans safely back. We got a nice big outdoor space and a golf course, so hopefully we can allow for galleries in 2021. Like I've mentioned, in case you can't tell, you know, I receive the volunteer newsletters every month. If you've been to a tournament office, you know that this is clearly a 12-month job. But to give people a little perspective, Tracy, you not only work on the Valspar, but you work on other tournaments as well, the Wells Fargo and the 3M Classic. Talk to me a little bit about what you're doing, maybe in those moments where you're not, you know, full bore planning the Valspar and you're working for other tournaments on tour. What do you oversee in that capacity?
Yeah, so basically, I mean, you know, from a specific tournament director role within Tampa, a tournament director is responsible for, you're at the helm, right? You know, the buck stops with you. You know, so between you and your tournament team, your tournament staff, I mean, it's everything from the general strategic planning to actually figuring out, okay, how are we going to drive revenue, you know, which is through sponsorships, through ticket sales, through branding efforts and parking and merchandise, all the ways that you might imagine that we raise revenue, and then figuring out, okay, what vendors, you know, are we going to use? What's the build going to look like? You know, we've got to recruit all those 2,000 volunteers every year.
Yes.
Recruiting the players. I mean, the PGA Tour event, and the PGA Tour is a pro sport, but it's very different than the leagues that have teams. The Tampa Bay Rays, for example, know who their team is, right? Unless they're making a trade for a player, they know they have a team. These pros are independent contractors. These PGA Tour golfers are independent contractors. So they choose each week, week in and week out, which events are they going to play. So you actually have to spend time actually convincing them and recruiting them to try and, you know, have them play in your tournament. So it's doing things like that. So it's each PGA Tour event, depending upon which one it is, you know, $20 to $30-40 million business. So it's definitely an all year round scenario. And we usually only have staffs of about 10 people full time. And then we use a lot of interns and then rely on a lot of volunteers, as we said. So, and then with my roles with Wells Fargo and 3M, you know, it's really myself and Hollis that are helping to oversee those, you know, our teams there. So I spend a lot of time, you know, with the tournament director and the assistant tournament directors at each of those two tournaments and reviewing their plans, you know, having weekly meetings, where are they at on things, helping with any major contract negotiations, you know, as it may relate to the tour and our title sponsors, spending a lot of time on their budgets with them and so forth. So yeah, there's not a lot of downtime for me in particular. No.
Yeah. You can see that obviously there is logistics, event production, management, you even got a little sales in there. I can hear as well too. So you're definitely putting on a lot of hats during the course of the year. It's very impressive. Again, PGA Tour Tournament Director Tracy West. Let's get into a few quick shot questions before we wrap up. One other tournament that I saw you've worked on is the one I mentioned earlier that I'm at here in Austin, Texas, the Match Play. Have you gotten to come out to Austin Country Club, or has that been kind of in a just remote capacity? I want to know if you've gotten to see the wonderful $1 million lake view that we're all privy to here at Austin Country Club.
Yeah, I actually have. I was there for 3 years.
Awesome.
We had a contract with Dell where they, in addition to, obviously the PGA Tour players are pretty busy during tournament week. So we worked with Dell to bring in some of the legends of the game to do an offsite pro-am and to do some hospitality and things with them. So we would, you know, so obviously Tom Kite and Ben Crenshaw live there. So
oh, yeah. They're fixtures in Austin, those two.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and they play an important role, you know, with the tournament. But we brought in a bunch of other legends. So Nancy Lopez, Lee Trevino, Dave Stockton, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I helped get those pros and bring those pros in. And then we managed, as I said, an offsite pro-am and some hospitality. So yeah, I've been to the Dell Match Play for 3 years and great, great tournament, great town, love Austin. I actually, for a while, Austin had a Champions Tour event that we managed at the time. So I've been to Austin quite a bit.
It's great. Are you more preferential toward the tacos, Tex-Mex scene, or maybe some Texas barbecue? What's your preference?
Oh, Texas barbecue.
Definitely. How about another PGA Tour tournament? Maybe one that you haven't worked on yourself that you've enjoyed going to as a spectator that maybe people would be surprised to learn about.
Yeah, I really enjoy. I go out to the Farmers every year, usually, and part of it obviously is work from a you know, player recruitment standpoint. I don't have to work at the tournament. I'm not working for the tournament, but I go to talk to, you know, a lot of the players and so forth, and it times out well before our tournament here in Tampa. So I really enjoy going to the Farmers. But you know, I've been to, you know, a lot of different PGA Tour events, and what's nice about the tour is, you know, every tournament is kind of unique and has its own feel and vibe to it. And I think that's, you know, that's if people travel around and go to a lot of different events, that's kind of the neat part of it, right? Each tournament has its own vibe.
Very true.
Here in Tampa, I mean, where our tagline for our event is the most colorful PGA Tour tournament in the world. And we try and live and breathe that. I mean, we've got color everywhere and do colorful things and a lot of things that we do at the tournament, you know, but other PGA Tour events have totally different vibes than that. So I think it's fun, you know, seeing, you know, the differences.
It's so true. And that color, it's like the color rush with the NFL jerseys, basically what you have going on in Valspar. It really is the real deal. It's as colorful as it gets. Tracy West, again, PGA Tour Tournament Director. Our final question we love to ask our guests is our 19th hole question. I'll phrase it like this for you, because I know how crazy it gets during tournament week and I've seen you move around and how nuts it can get. So Sunday night after the tournament's finished, we've cheers the champion and you finally maybe have just a few minutes to sit down and have like a meal of your choice. What do you like to go with at the end of a long day?
Oh gosh. That's a good question. For me, if I had my meal of choice, it would be a Maine lobster flown in from New England for me with a lot of drawn butter and maybe a half of a ribeye, next to it. Can't do a whole ribeye and lobster. Can't eat that much. And, some really good homemade bread, like a ciabatta, you know, bread of some sort, and some roasted broccolini, and I'd be good to go.
Yep, you're speaking our language. Surf and turf always goes far with our crowd. I appreciate that answer. Again, Tracy, thank you so much for joining the Course of Life. Looking forward to the Valspar coming up in the spring and all the other tournaments that you're working on in the future.
Great. Thank you so much. And really a pleasure to be with you, and happy holidays as well.
That interview with Tracy West is brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, the makers of the Phone Caddy. It's a one-of-a-kind phone holder for golfers designed to mount right onto the golf cart. The Phone Caddy works seamlessly with any phone model. Phone cards onto the cart in seconds, so you can keep your yardage and scoring apps open and at your fingertips, change music, answer calls and texts, all that and more with the Phone Caddy. It's the most functional way, Alex, to keep your phone safe and ready on the course, and it is the perfect stocking stuffer.
It is, and a literally perfect segue there. They were featured in the Us Magazine holiday gift guide. So shout out to our friends at Desert Fox Golf, getting a little celebrity tabloid love from the holiday gift front. So these
we've
gifts
been saying this forever. Yes, and you can save money with us.
That's right.
It's that easy. You can save 20% off your purchase of a Desert Fox Phone Caddy by using the promo code Course of Life, and use that promo code on their regular Phone Caddies plus their patriotic line, typically excluded from any deal they do. So you can save 20% on that special Phone Caddy for anyone who's a firefighter, who's a veteran, who's a police officer. Get them something to really make them know how special they are to you this holiday season. So again, that's promo code Course of Life at DesertFoxGolf.com. Save 20% off your Phone Caddy with Course of Life as the promo code at DesertFoxGolf.com. Great interview there with Tracy. Love all the stories about Arnie, and just interesting to hear kind of the different thoughts and what they're doing to really make sure they're staying safe, and what may be happening at the Valspar in terms of fans.
Yeah, that's right. I know we're talking about that a lot too. Like, what's this going to look like? How do we get fans back in? And, you know, she touched on conversations with Houston and how they did it with 2,000 or 2,500 back there. And so Valspar is sitting around April right now, Mike. The update, you know, as of tweets a couple days ago, they pretty much said no on fans. We're up to about February at this point. The Waste Management hasn't officially said it. I think they're going to have a limited gallery, but that 16th hole is not going to look the way we know and love for Super Bowl weekend. So we're at about February right now for no fans. We'll see if the spring months bring any more hope there for galleries and golf. But looking forward to the Valspar and seeing what Tracy can do with the tournament week regardless.
We will indeed. And if you liked that interview with Tracy, plus everything else we do on this podcast, go ahead and give us a rating and subscribe on the podcast app of your choice, or all of them. You can just go to all of them and give us 5 stars and subscribe on all of them and download on all of your devices. And it really helps boost our numbers, and it gives us this false sense of pride. And
which is always good, because everyone could use a little bit of that this year.
I love having an inflated ego. It's fantastic.
We need it. We don't. There's not much to inflate, but we'll take any inflation we can get, right?
There's nothing to inflate, especially when you once again don't have a winning week in college football, Alex.
Ouch! Professional segue there to my 5-6 week in college football.
Yeah,
not great. It's just,
are you going to keep blaming COVID for causing you to have bad picks? Is that what you're doing here?
Right, I am. I just don't know who's sitting out and who's starting and what level of effort I'm getting from these guys and what hotel room they had to do their walkthrough in. And like, you know, there's all sorts of logistics going on with this college football season as they're trying to just squeeze these games in as we get closer to the Christmas and holiday season. Mike, they've officially just dropped the bowl restrictions. Remember how there's a million bowl games and you had to at least be like half decent to get into a bowl game, like win like 5 or 6 games? They just completely dropped that. And so just anybody can get into any bowl game now. There's all the rules.
You know, what we need, what America needs is a bowl-a-palooza.
Yeah.
What we need.
We do. And I think we're going to get it, you know, just postponements, barring any crazy postponements like we've already seen, though. So it's like I'm already kind of mentally hedging the idea that maybe we'll only see about 2 out of 3 bowl games. But lo and behold, we're closer to bowl season. We've got the playoff picture starting to come into clear view. And we'll talk more playoff specific stuff in the next few weeks.
Let's talk NFL, because the playoffs are now clearly in sight for my New York Giants.
this is the underdog story of 2020, if there ever was one. I think we'd maybe even killed the Giants before the season started. And then the season already started horribly and we double killed the Giants. And apparently the Giants have several lives because they are now leading the NFC East. Colt McCoy, your new hero, former Texas Longhorn, steps in and you guys go to Seattle and get a win. What the hell is going on here, Mike?
It's magic. It's just incredible to be a Giants. You know, this is the best time to be a Giants fan. I don't remember what I said 3 weeks ago, but the Giants are going to win the Super Bowl. That's all I'm going to say.
This is that crazy, stupid thing, too, where the Giants have no business being in the playoffs and then they have no business making a run and they make a run.
Let's also just say real quick how the NFC least, as we sometimes like to call it, now has the Giants beat the Seahawks, and the Washington football team just finished here on a Monday night a come from behind surprise win over the formerly undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers.
Impressive stuff from you guys over there. I love it. And the playoff graphic, I think Dallas is still in the hunt with a 3-8 record right now as they play Tuesday evening. So that's just some funny stuff going on in the NFC least. Over on the AFC side, I'm calling it hashtag the path to the playoffs. It is a very narrow hole shot, Mike. It's like getting a 3-iron between a set of trees when you're in the woods and you got to get out with a low one. It can be done. It can be pulled off, but it's going to be done very carefully. The Patriots are now 6-6. I think they got to win out in these last four games to sneak their way in.
Yeah, they got an opportunity. I don't know how good that opportunity is. The good thing is they get to play the Dolphins, Bills, and Jets to finish the season.
Always ending with a division, so that's nice. That kind of leaves it all in our hands there. We're out in the West Coast. They got a Thursday night game against the Rams after blowing out the Chargers. So same stadium, two games in 5 days for the Pats. And then, it's all division. So it is kind of all downhill. I don't trust this team one bit, though, but I'm still fascinated, and it's fun to be in this territory. So nonetheless, we're going to be insufferable this week as well, too. On Twitter, he's at MWRINC, and I'm at Course of Life 1 as we eagerly await our football team's next games.
I just want you to know, though, that if you get to the final week of the season and you play the Jets, and the Jets somehow, some way, figure out that they are not supposed to send all their rushers on a Hail Mary play, and they beat you, I will not stop laughing.
That would be a never live it down for my life football moment, for sure.
I keep reminding you about those two times. Who was it? Eli and the Giants beat your Patriots in the Super Bowl those two times?
No, I think it's...
I never let you forget that. So
that's NFL. I think you're confusing your sports, Mike.
Remember when the Patriots were undefeated until they lost to the Giants in the Super Bowl? You remember that?
Another shining moment for myself as well, as a Patriots fan. Thank God we got those six others on the side that I got in my back pocket. But good times is always at the Patriots-Giants rivalry. Let's hashtag always end with food, brought to you by our friends at Restelli's. Golf10 is the promo code for 10% off everything on the site, Restelli's.com. They do responsibly sourced meats, individually packaged and shipped directly to you. They are still shipping in time for Christmas. So if you're doing a Christmas at home, you want to make something cool, try a new meat dish, get their meats, no grocery store trip. Golf10 is the promo code for 10% off. And holiday plans. First Texas Christmas for me in my decade of living down here. I usually always make the family trip to my wife's or my family back up to the cold, but I'm staying down in the Lone Star State. So that's the official breaking news here, is it's all staying in the Lone Star State for Christmas this year for this house.
That means you got to figure out what you're going to cook for Christmas dinner.
I've already got the notes going, Mike. There's early talk of a surf and turf combo at some point, maybe on Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve. There will be a ham at some point on Christmas Day, and then you can fill in the blanks from there. So we got a couple more weeks to decide on that front.
Well, I mean, you could go full Jew, like I won't, but like you could, and have Chinese food on Christmas Day, it's a good Chinese food restaurant when it's open on Christmas Day.
That's right. Chinese food in the movies, the Jewish American tradition for life's upon end. I love it. I could do that. That's it. That's always in the running. I'm a sucker for Chinese food as well. Potato latkes, Mike. It is that season. Hanukkah week
it is
arriving soon as well, too.
Sonic starts, I think, Thursday, I think it is.
Good stuff. What are you baking? What's the next kitchen?
The next one is actually, it's going to be a big project. I'm going to be doing this coming weekend. So keep an eye on my Instagram at MWRINC. I'm doing 7-layer cookies. Cookie that I used made for quite a few years when I was still at home with my mother. It was always a two-day event because you have to do it over 2 days. And they're these fantastic. You probably know what they are. It's a layer of pink, white, and green. It's with apricot preserves in the middle and then covered in chocolate on the top and bottom, cut into little rectangles. They are fantastic.
That sounds divine. Wow. There's a lot of prep time, I feel like, associated with that, though, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a lot of work because you gotta let it sit overnight in the fridge and kind of smush it together with all the layers, and then you gotta make milk chocolate. It's a lot of work. Keep it on my Instagram. You'll see me complaining on there.
The colors, though, it's gonna be worth it. If you get the right angle for the IG too, it's gonna hit just right. So I look forward to that project as well too, from the Mike Russell Baking Kitchen. Looking forward to your next 7-layer cookies coming your way for the holiday season. We're getting close to the holidays now, just a couple weeks away. We've got another exciting food TV guest coming up next week.
You know what else is coming up soon?
What's up?
Festivus.
Yes, that's right. I looked at the calendar, Mike. So we have an episode dropping on the 22nd, and the 29th could be the year in review, but the 22nd could be the Festivus. So lots of things for us to talk about and iron out here in the next couple weeks. But stay tuned with us. For Michael, I'm Alex. Everyone have a good week.